This is All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, originating from Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery, from coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235, and let's talk about wine. Again, the phone number to call is 646-727-3235. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
A little delay. Skype is dead. I'm calling on my cell phone. Skype is dead.
Yeah, I had trouble with it too, and I kept messing with it, and finally that's what I'm using now, because I was using Google Hangouts, and Google Hangouts gives me a 404 error, so I don't know what the problem is with that one, but there's something fishy going on. And then I couldn't connect with Skype, and I finally worked on about 2 minutes before the show started, and I was like, oh no.
Yeah, I saw you pop up there, and I was sitting there at about 10 after 6, I did my normal check. I brought up Skype, and I connected, and I did my voice test, and everything was fine. And I loaded up our studio page, and then I went and was checking on other stuff and reading stuff, and I came back to sit down for the show at about 9:45, and I tried to load Skype, and nothing happened. And it said Skype is not connecting for Wineman. And I'm going, oh, boy. And so I started to play with it and jump around. Now Skype, when I go to the icon to try to click on it to even open up Skype, it won't open. So,
well, you see, it would dial in and it would disconnect like immediately. Like it was trying to call and it would go boop and it was out. And when I loaded Hangouts, because I've used Hangouts for months now for the show, and like a home phone, and it would give me a 404, you know, not found. Well, now, interesting, I just tried to load Hangouts and it loads.
Oh.
So I'm wondering if it was like a down, you know, VoIP or something went down somewhere and Skype and voice, everything, you know, connections were affected by it. Because it's working now.
I mean, Skype here, but... I don't know. It just stopped. It was working earlier and it stopped.
Yeah.
And no, maybe. Skype is not loading now. It's clicking and not loading. So maybe it's not completely fixed. I don't know, but it was.
Yeah.
I played. Finally, I just got my phone and then it said you want to end the show. I mean the.
I was telling me that too.
Yeah, and I'm going, no, I don't need the show. I just, you know, I want you to hook up to Skype. And I even tried a second number. I have two numbers for Blog Talk Radio. And I tried a second number, and that didn't work. So I don't know. I don't know what happened with it. And Skype decided to play games tonight or something. So
it's still not working, huh? It's not working
still
now
not
or anything,
working.
Huh?
No, not at all. It's not getting anything at all on it. I went to it again and just now tried it again, and it's not loading. It just I click on it and it, you know, gives me the little circly thing to let me know that it's there, and boom, it clicks out almost immediately. Like, you know, this isn't really a site. You can't go here. So. No, I don't know. What's so odd was it was working very well earlier. I mean, you know, about 10 after 6, I did a sound check and everything, and, you know, and everything was great, and didn't have any problems. And then I, that was the end of it. So I don't know. I don't know. So I called in, and I'll, yeah.
That's a pain.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I know. But I don't know that thing did that. I don't know why it would. But, oh, well, yeah. I got a few things to talk about tonight. No guests, thank goodness, because it probably would give us fits trying to get a hold of a guest, too. But
yeah.
I've got a few things to talk about. Well, let's see. What's coming up this next week so that we can celebrate? That's always good. Today, by the way, is National Fried Chicken Day. So if you haven't had your fried chicken today, then do it. And
a wine pairing for fried chicken would...
You know, I was just trying to think. What, you know, fried chicken. Now, I've had some fried chicken that was really, really spicy. You know, and so your wine pairing for that as opposed to a fried chicken that, you know, you just, you know, dip in eggs and then roll it around in crackers and throw it in the frying pan, that would be a little bit different there. But I'm thinking with fried chicken, maybe a Chardonnay. That I think might go well, as long as it's not real spicy. So, you know, open up a Chardonnay with your fried chicken and then have some new potatoes on the side or something like that. So, tomorrow, National Strawberry Sundae Day and also National Macaroni Day. So, you know, have your macaroni and wine, then have your strawberry sundae afterward. And then Saturday, National Chocolate with Almonds Day. Now, there you go. Pull out your cabs and pull out your Zinfandels and, you know, that's your day to start doing the heavy reds and have yourself some good chocolate with almonds, you know. That would be fun there. Sunday, National Sugar Cookie Day. Oh, boy, let's see. What would you have with sugar cookies? You wouldn't want to go, well, maybe sweet, but I don't think so. I think I'd go away from the sweet a little bit and maybe have a, maybe a Merlot with the sugar cookies? Sugar Merlot. I don't know. That doesn't sound right either. So, then Monday, Blueberry Day. There's all sorts of different breweries in that. And then Tuesday, then, well, that's great. Monday, Blueberry, National Blueberry Muffin Day. So back-to-back days. And if you want something to drink besides wine on those 2 days, Monday is also National Pina Colada Day, and Tuesday is National Mojito Day. I haven't had a mojito in years, nor have I had a pina colada in years. So, you know. Then next Wednesday, National Pecan Pie Day. I think maybe a Gewürztraminer with a pecan pie might be an interesting game in the mouth there. And then next Thursday, National French Fries Day. Ooh. There's all sorts of ways you can have French fries too, you know, loaded and just cheese fries and chili and all sorts of stuff on it. So next Thursday, you can probably indulge in just about any wine depending on how you want to prepare your French fries. But there is for the next following week, your items to celebrate with wine. So I think we're good on that. Now, let me see what if Skype is working. Nope, Skype's not doing anything for me here again. What we're going to do tonight, I got a couple things I want to talk about. I was going through, first, let me, Innery River Winery. I announced a couple weeks ago, let's see, end of June. So, you know, it was about 2 weeks ago. June the 26th is when they posted it. So, in June, they posted that they were having their total solar eclipse wine party. And it was from 1 to 4 on 8/21/17. Well, I received a follow-up email to that, and they said they've extended it. They've extended the hours and extended and offered more tickets. And so they originally sold 300. They're offering another 50 tickets, and their hours are from 11 to 5. The old one was from, I think, let me see what it says here. The old one was from 1 to 4. This one's from 11 to 5. And so if you're interested in that, Ennery River in Newberry, South Carolina, just about 30 minutes from Columbia, is offering a total eclipse live music, local wine, $20 admission, solar eclipse party. So fun time. Solar eclipses are cool. If you've never seen a total eclipse, those are pretty cool. Stars come out and all that other stuff and when you see it. So check that out. And if you're in the area, it's a good time. Ennery River, good people too. They were at the winery. I want to talk about sugar and wine. Sugar and wine. I saw this article. It's a blog. Oh, geez, I don't know who wrote this. I don't have a thing here. Maybe it's at the bottom of this. Let me see. Madeline Puckett writes a blog. She's a certified sommelier and creator of the New York Times bestseller, Wine Folly, The Essential Guide to Wine. So she's got herself a few credentials going back there. But she wrote this blog here, and it caught my eye. Sugar and wine. Everybody's always asked me how sweet a wine is or how much sugar is in the wine or stuff like that. People coming in wanting wines that are sweet. And she said many red and white wines taste dry, but do contain small amounts of sugar, which is true. I mean, the dry just simply means not sweet. But the question is how much sugar, how much sugar is in it. And we talk about residual sugar, how much sugar or residual sugar in it. Now, sugar and wine, understanding sweetness, she said that one gram per liter of residual sugar or less, 1 gram or less per liter is going to give you a bone dry wine. You won't detect any at all. 0 to 10 grams per liter residual sugar is still going to be a dry wine. And you're still going to pick up dryness from that. It's going to be there. Excuse me. Now, the bone dry, it's going to have 0 calories, so it's not going to pick it up, but that's not right. And I disagree with her on this because I was reading this earlier. And regardless, bone dry is still going to have alcohol, and the alcohol is going to metabolize into sugars. And so, diabetics always ask me, how dry is this? And I'm like, why? And, well, I'm diabetic, but the alcohol metabolizes into sugar. So, her calorie log here is not really accurate, I'm afraid to say. But 1 to 10 grams per liter residual sugar is dry. 10 to 35 grams a liter of residual sugar is off dry. Most dry wines contain 0 to 10 grams per liter residual sugar. Off dry, typically found in the category of 10 to 35. And then the sweet wines, these are your Moscatos and your sweet Rieslings, are 35 to 120 grams per liter. Now, grams, not much. That's not much. And the liter is more than a bottle. A bottle is 750 milliliters or 3/4 of a liter. And then dessert wines, tawny ports, ice wines, sauternes, 120 to 220 grams a liter residual sugar. Now, she's saying that the calories in these Our bone dry is 1 calorie per glass, dry 0.6 calories per glass, off dry 6 to 21. And what did you just do? No, don't do this. Oh, jeez. My computer decided to play games with me tonight.
Mm-mm.
And sign out. I'm going to have to go back and find that again. I'm going to have to find this again. I'm going to check this out again. Why does it do that? All right. Okay, there we are. All right. I'm back to it again here. I think. Yeah, there we are. Okay. Sorry about that. Sweet, 21 to 72 calories per glass, and very sweet, 72 to 130 calories per glass. But, again, alcohol metabolizes to sugars. So these calories per glass is moot because you're going to have alcohol with the wine. And it's going to change the calorie count. So, all right. But the sugar in wine is called residual sugar, or RS. That's the most common, what we refer to. Residual sugars doesn't come from corn syrup or granulated sugar. It primarily comes from the fruit sugars in wine grapes, the fructose and glucose. Okay, of course, there are a few instances where cheap wine producers will use sugar or grape concentrate to sweeten a wine. But the fructose and glucose is combined is the residual sugar. So that's, you got to keep that in. Fructose and glucose is not the same as your table sugar. So it's a different there. Wines are basically, when winemaking happens, yeast eats the sugars and makes ethanol or alcohol as a byproduct, which wine, science 101, yeast turns the sugars into alcohol. A dry wine is when the yeast eats all the sugars, and a sweet wine is when the yeast is stopped, usually by chilling the fermentation or, adding something to it before it eats all the sugars. So that's why sweet wines have less alcohol than dry wines. So it's a good way, and I explain this to people whenever they come in the winery. If you're not sure how sweet a wine is, a very basic rule you can follow is look at the alcohol level. Now, if the alcohol level is high, then more than likely it's a dry wine because the sugars have been fermented out. If it's low, and it's a good chance it's going to be a sweeter wine. Now, when I say low, 7, 8, 9, 10%, high, 14, 15, 16%. You get wines in the middle, 10, 11, 12, 13% alcohol, and it depends on what's being done to them. Those can vary either way, but just a good way to find out. And she also mentioned this here, German Riesling. When it has 8 to 9% alcohol by volume, it's usually sweet, and 10 to 11 is usually a little bit drier. So that's just a very basic rule to follow there, but it usually works. Now, she has a sugar in wine chart here, which is good. I like this. It's calories and carbs in wine. And it's pretty much equal to calories and carbs from what she's shown from this chart here. Now, this is from the residual sugar. And again, she is ignoring the alcohol, which, well. But she's saying that grams per liter, there is, well, approximately equal the amount of percentage of, let's see how she got this. Okay, grams per liter is 17 grams per liter, for example, on this one, which equals grams per 100 milliliters, obviously 1.7, and the percentage is 1.7% of residual sugar, which translates into 9.9 calories for a 5-ounce glass or 9.9 carbs for a 5-ounce glass or 150 milliliter glasses, which really isn't quite the same, but close enough. So she's showing calories and carbs as being the same all the way down to the chart. For example, a residual sugar of 22%, that's not right, it's 20 from residual sugar percentage. No, she's breaking down the liters. I don't know, this chart's confusing. Oh, well, I'm not going to sit there and try to figure this out. How do you determine residual sugar in a wine? The most accurate way is to identify the sweetness in the wine is look for a text sheet about the wine in question. Now, a lot of producers offer the technical notes on a vintage as a courtesy. The residual sugar is usually displayed in one of three ways: in grams per liter, or in grams per 100 milliliter, or as a percentage, which grams per liter and grams per 100 milliliter, and the percentage, that's what the chart is here, I guess. So 220 grams per liter is 22 grams per 100 milliliter, or 22% residual sugar. So I was right in that. And she shows that as being 127.7 calories, as it is also 127.7 carbs. So the higher it is, the more carbs, which equals the calories, which doesn't say anything about the alcohol. She's the exact levels of residual sugar are actually quite different to taste with our naked tongue. Highly trained tasters often have trouble identifying residual sugar. The main reason is we can't taste the sweetness that well is because other traits in the wine, including the acid level and the tannins, distort the taste of the sweetness. You can test this yourself by tasting plenty of sugar and then tasting the same portion while biting a lemon. The acidity will cancel out all the sweetness on your tongue, and then the wine does the same thing. So the higher the sugar, it doesn't particularly mean that you can taste it a lot more. It just depends on how acidic the wine is. There are some white wines out there that tend to be a little bit sweeter, and they tend to be quite acidic, and you don't really pick it up as much on the sweetness. And it's funny because my Plantation White, the residual sugar on that is just about the same as the Chardonnay. It's not a whole big difference. I think it's, I don't recall right offhand off this latest batch, but the Plantation White doesn't have the acid in it as the Chardonnay does. And people immediately say, oh, that Chardonnay is much drier. And I said it is drier a little bit, but they always interpret that as being very dry simply because the acid in the Chardonnay is more pronounced and it stops the sensation of the sugars in the mouth. And so they detect it as being less sweet, and they're getting the acid that's throwing them off. Cheap wine usually has residual sugar. Now, she's got some stuff on here which I read, and I'm going, wait a minute, no. She said that cheap wines less than $10 a bottle usually contain some residual sugar, anywhere from 2 to 15 grams per liter. But there's all sorts of exceptions to that rule. So to make a blanket statement like that, I don't particularly agree. And she also says if you spend a little bit more on wine, around $15 to $20 a bottle, producers tend to feature less residual sugar, if any at all. Grapes of higher quality so the wines don't need sweetness to taste fruity. And this is something, you know, one of the comments in this article, you know, on this blog, called to question that too, because what is fruitiness but sweetness? I don't know. There was a girl in the winery a week ago. She was talking about the fruit flavors creating sweetness. And we were discussing how the fruit can give you the taste of sweet, but not particularly the residual sugar equaling that. So these are all things that, I don't know. Drink less. You have less sugars. You also have less alcohol. And, if you're looking for sugars and trying to cut back on sugars and carbs, then that's it. She's a sommelier. You know, why didn't she bring up alcohol? It's just, but she says in conclusion, it's reassuring to know that many premium whites that taste tried generally feature less sugar. A little sugar in wine isn't a bad thing, so don't go on a sugar witch hunt before tasting the difference. Many wine drinkers actually prefer a little residual sugar in their red wine because of the richness, complexity, and body sugar adds to wine. But just a touch. So, I'm drinking some Chilean Carmenere tonight. So, very nice. I like Carmenere. But not going into the alcohol and how alcohol affects what she's talking about, you know, the metabolism. Maybe that's not the point. Maybe it's not the point talking about the alcohol. But in the comments after this article, there's quite a few comments too. What is it? How many here? 30? Yeah, 33 comments. I was reading through those. And they're going into more of the technical. A couple of people wrote in the technical aspects of them and all that. So, sugar in wine. If I can figure out how to do this, I'll put this on our All About Wine page so you can take a look at it. Share. I don't think the share is what I want. Share on your timeline. Ooh, maybe I can do this, but not right now because I have to play with it a lot. All right, let me leave. And sugars in wine. A complex thing for a lot of people who don't really understand it. I probably didn't help you much with that. Lambrusco, I just saw this here. Origin, Northern Italy, also known as Lambrusco di Cervera and Lambrusco Grassabera, etc. Pale to deep purple, taste of cherry, blackberry, violet, rhubarb, cream. Family of roughly 8 closely related grapes that are used to produce sparkling wines ranging from sweet to are from dry to sweet. And so it goes on to say the Lambrusco can really high fruit, medium body, medium tannins, a lot of acid and medium alcohol. And it goes on to say Lambruscos can be very good. They can be very whoop, I just dropped y'all. Can be very good, very fruity and good for certain meals, cheeses, and the acidity just really blends well with a lot of different cheese spreads and stuff. So I just saw this Lambrusco. A lot of people like the Lambrusco. Years ago, I usually drink Lambrusco, but it's not been something I've gone to in quite some time. Other things I want to talk about tonight. Oh, here we go. Keith Joshua Vineyards. This is something coming up here. I always like to share what's going to happen. This Saturday, the 15th, next Saturday, today's the 6th, so next Saturday, the 15th, he will host again Dinner in the Vines. This is a four-course food and wine pairing. Seats are extremely limited and hoping that, you know, whoever can attend. The cost for wine, dinner, everything, $75. That includes everything. Earlier in the day, Blaine Long, who was the Arizona Voice contestant from the Blake Shelton team on The Voice, will be performing at the as the weekly summer concert series from 1 to 4. And this is from 6 to 8. I see these things pop up every once in a while, and he really does a great job. He's got some great wines down there. I had an opportunity to visit him a few years ago, and he has some great wines. First, obviously, on arrival, Genoa salami, cornets with Borson cheese, steamed artichokes with lemon marmalade, Mexican caviar in corn tortilla cups. The first course, roasted red bell pepper and tomato bisque with fried leek-baked Parmesan cheese straw. Second course, mixed green salad with apple, jicama, and citrus vinaigrette. The main course, Cabernet braised short ribs, twice-baked poblano potatoes, French green beans with lemon thyme butter, and then cream brulee and crisp phyllo shells and fresh berries to finish up the meal. So his table's actually set up outside, and they actually do all this outside. It's coming up on the 15th from 6 to 8. It's getting like 120 degrees down there. But they are up on a higher elevation. So, hey, if you can, if you're in that area, it is a great view, a beautiful vineyard, really a nice winery. And the chef he gets in from Tucson at a restaurant, a fancy restaurant there in Tucson that he uses. Also, there's one out of Phoenix that he brings down a chef from there also. So, a couple things to keep in mind for next Saturday. Next Saturday. So, let's see. Here we go. Wine appellations of origin. I was doing some searching around for different things. I ran across this, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit, finish up tonight. The TTB, Wine Appellations of Origin homepage, serves as a warehouse for all U.S. and foreign appellations of origin. So, you know, if you're curious about that, go to ttb.gov, www, click on the wine section, and then go to the wine appellation or appellations, and it will give you. But the definition of an appellation of origin is a country, a U.S. state, or the foreign equivalent, a province or something. A listing of up to three states, multiple state appellations, or the foreign equivalent. A U.S. country or the foreign U.S. county or foreign equivalent. And for U.S. wines, a listing of up to three counties. And a U.S. or foreign government recognized delimited grape growing areas, also referred to as a viticulture area under U.S. regulations. So these are the definitions of your appellation. The application process, appellations of origin are only defined for use in wine. An appellation of origin applies to grape wine. A U.S. or foreign viticulture area appellations are of origin apply only to grape wine. I mean, they emphasize this over and over. You're not going to have an appellation for something else, which brings to mind the push in Sonoma County, California now to have marijuana labeled as appellations. Now, how can this be quite specific here when they're talking about grape wines and all that? Can you have something else with appellations? I don't know. I kept thinking, well, wait a minute, if this is the rules for appellations, then it pretty much negates any possibilities for marijuana appellations, which they are trying to do. So, and then country, state, or foreign equivalent, multi-state or foreign equivalent, county or foreign equivalent, multi-county, U.S. only, appellations of origin apply to non-grape wine only if permissible under the laws and regulations of the labeled appellation of origin. So then again, we question what's going on there. For U.S. wines with an American country, not less than 75% of the volume of the wine is derived from grapes or agricultural commodity grown in the labeled appellation. Not less than 75%. The wine is fully finished, except for cellar treatment or blending, which does not alter the class or type of the wine. And in the label appellation, except that in the case of a state appellation of origin, okay, the wine conforms to the laws and regulations of the label appellation of origin, governing the composition, method of production, all that. So in the United States, a few laws and few rules there. Multi-state appellations comprise of not more than 3 states, and the states are contiguous. Now, this I question then, if this is the law, this is the rule, this is the regulation, why do we have appellations that, like the Mississippi Valley appellation, that brings in like 8 states? And all 3 states are in an unbroken line, so you can't say, you know, Colorado, California, Washington as an appellation. 100% of wine is derived from grapes grown in the label states. The wine is fully finished in one of the label states. The percentage of wine derived from grapes grown in each of the label states is shown on the label. So if you have 3 states, you have to show 40% from California, 20% from Oregon, and 40% from Washington. The labeled area is an American viticulture area approved under regulations. Not less than 85% of the volume of the wine is derived from grapes grown in the labeled area, and the wine is fully finished in the state or one of the states that are located there. It also lists the rules for imported wines. Okay. When an appellation of origin is required, generally appellations of origin are only required for grape wine. An appellation of origin is required on grape wine when the wine is labeled with a grape varietal designation and one of the following designations, and the wine is not from the origin indicated. So there's been some changes on this, but for example, Angelica from U.S., Burgundy, France, Claret, France, Chablis, France, Champagne, France, Chianti, Italy, Sauternes, France, Hach, Germany, Malaga, Spain, Marsala, Italy, Madeira, Portugal, Moselle, France, Port, Portugal, Rhine wine, Germany, Sauternes, France, Sherry from Spain, and Tokay from Hungary. These are the list of wines that has to be from one of these destinations. And then it goes, and I mentioned this on the show before, then it goes and explains the law that came into effect on March 10th, 2006, that restricted legal use of the above names, which does not include, with the exception of Angelica, which is a U.S. wine and therefore not included in the agreement. So all the others are. But I've talked about this. The grandfather position accepts certain non-EU wines labeled with one of the above names. So except, again, Angelica. So it, you know, and also has to include a vintage date and the phrase estate bottled, which is also very restrictive. So these are all things. The type of appellation of origin required, generally with one exception, any one of the types of appellations, country, state, etc., may be used when an appellation is required. The one exception is wine labeled as estate bottled, which must be labeled with a viticultural area. So if it says estate bottled, it has to have a viticultural area on there. So look for that. If it, you know, that is a requirement. Now, when an appellation of origin is required, the type size requirements are for containers, 187 milliliter or less must be at least 1 millimeter in size of the appellation of origin. If it's over 187 milliliter, it has to be at least 2 millimeters in size. So, and it must appear on the same label and in the same view as the product designation. Rules and regulations, but you need to look for stuff like that. And then, you know, and it's interesting, the appellation of the countries and stuff, and, you know, estate bottled, there's one to keep an eye on. If it says estate bottled, it has to contain the viticultural area on that. But all these names and regulations, all this stuff, AXI does mean something. It's not just thrown on there. If you start getting aware of it, all that, it starts giving you an idea of a little bit more of where the wines are from, what they're for, or what they, where they came from, and what types of wines they are, which you will get consistency in them that way. And it's always a good way to look for wines that you are particularly interested in, the wines that you particularly like or something, and start doing a, well, your own type of tasting. AVAs, we've talked about this before. Currently, there are, as of November 30th, 2016, 239 established AVAs in the United States. California has the most with 138. And everybody else has, what is it, 101 spread out around the country. Single state AVAs, Arizona have some, Arkansas, California, all their big old long list of them. And there are AVAs within AVAs. I've talked about AVAs before, and it's something that I talk about it, and when people come into the winery and we start talking about stuff, and I question, I said, did anybody here know what an AVA is? And nobody does. It amazes me that the wine drinkers out there, the everyday man, if you will, the one who enjoys wine and all that, doesn't understand what an AVA is. And it surprises me simply because it is almost as important as the varietal in some areas. I mean, you can get yourself a Cabernet Sauvignon from Paso Robles. You can get yourself a Cabernet Sauvignon from Napa. You can get yourself a Cabernet Sauvignon from the foothills of California. Or you can get yourself a Cabernet Sauvignon from Colorado or Idaho or, you know, any number of other states, and it's going to be so different because of the AVAs, American Viticulture Areas. So, it's always surprising that there's not more emphasis on AVAs. There's not more education, not more materials. There's not more things being spread out and talked about aviation in this country because of the fact that it is out there everywhere. I mean, it's something that it's on all the bottles and everything else, and wineries and areas actually fight and apply and wait the years and submit what they have and say this is worth an AVA here and stuff like that. And it doesn't, and then they get all that information and everything, and nobody knows. So I'm always fascinated that AVAs aren't more out there for everything. But oh well, that's, you know, I've known about AVAs for a long, long time, and I just always think we should know more about it. I try to spread the word at the winery too. I try to tell people as much as I can about AVAs and what they are and what to look for and all that. So all right. I've got nothing else to talk about tonight.
I was looking at the TTB site that you were talking about. I was on the TTB page, and it's quite extensive. There's quite a bit of information on there. First, you have to know how to spell Appalachian. I was thinking of the mountain ranges, and that sounds too good. So it could happen. Appalachian, you say Appalachian. I'm like, North Carolina, Tennessee, and all that area. That's what I'm looking at. And then I find out it's not even, I mean, it's the first three letters, and then after that, it just changes everything. I'm like, no wonder I couldn't find that stupid thing. So, yeah, so it's Appalachians, Appalations, and not the mountain range. So you said, and it's really sad on my part, I think, because all these years we've done this, and you've talked about AVAs and Appalachians. I never knew it was spelled that way. So,
Maybe I'm pronouncing it wrong. It's Appalachians.
Yeah.
All
right. Well, but see, the mountain range is Appalachians, but it's APP something CH, whatever it is. The Appalachian Mountains.
Yeah.
North Carolina. That's what I'm thinking. But it's not, that's not, there must be, I don't know. APP Appalachians, whatever. And that's not how AVA is. Appalachians is spelled.
Appalachians,
so.
Yeah.
No wonder I couldn't find it. All these years, I was like, oh, my gosh, I didn't know it was spelled that way. So that was good.
But
there's
lots of information on that TTB.gov. I mean, you can just you can spend hours, literally hours and hours just looking up stuff and it's going, oh, wow, look at that. Oh, wow, look at that. I mean, it's just – and that's just in the wine section. I mean, if you're into spirits or anything else, there's just – pages and pages and pages. And this is our Bible for what we can and can't do. This is what our requirements, what we can, what we are allowed to do, and taxes and what we owe taxes on, what we have to do. I had a guy who stopped by the winery yesterday. He stopped by 2.5 years, almost 3 years ago. He stopped by the winery. We talked. He says, I'm opening up a winery up in Brooksville. And I said, well, good. I said, where and when? He says, well, as soon as I get my license and all the stuff that I need, I'm going to open up a winery in Brooksville. And I said, well, keep in touch. And he says, yeah. And he said, maybe we can, I'm looking at having somebody make some wines for me. He says, maybe I can have you make a couple. And I said, I said, let me know. I didn't see him. He stopped in yesterday. It took him almost 3 years to get all of his license and permits and certifications and all that stuff. Almost 3 years. I mean,
that's amazing.
I told him, it is. I go, 3 years. He said, I had to do this, had to do that. And he wasn't too upset about it. When I ask people, whenever, we do interviews, I say, government, love them, hate them, want to kiss them, want to kill them. And you know, most of them say, oh, it's pretty simple and all that. But this guy just for 3 years has been battling it. And he said he finally got his license and he finally got the stuff that he needed and all that stuff. But I'm just going, oh, my gosh, 3 years. And,
wow.
And it didn't take us that long to open up there at the winery. We, you know, it was like 8-9 months by the time everything was done. But, wow, I just... Mm. Always stuff like that. Just whenever I hear stuff like that, I shiver, you know. And, but then there's a lot. There's, you know, there's people all over that's that is opening up stuff now and doing stuff all over the place. There's new wineries coming out, and same thing with beer. You know, breweries all over the place popping up. There's he told me that there was a guy that's opening up a distillery just north of Brooksville. So, you know, it's, you know, something's happening out there, but boy, I mean, you know, it takes that long to do stuff. And they don't have enough people, too. I mean, I have to say, the local branch of the GTB, the state branch of Trade Tobacco Bureau, is overwhelmed. They just, they have so many people to cover so much area, and this is your area, and you got to do it well. That's great, and it's wonderful, but they keep adding breweries and wineries in those areas, which results in them working more and more and more. A couple years ago, they started doing we used to get 2 audits a year to go through paperwork and everything. A couple years ago, they started to do one of the audits of it's a self audit. I do it myself. I go through, I do everything. I send them all the paperwork and all that, and then they double check the paperwork and you know, say, okay, you've passed this audit, because they just don't have the time or personnel to go out and do it. So, and it's happening that way all over the country. I mean, it's just it's overwhelming for a lot of these places to try to keep up with that. So. Another page here, too, TTB, is Saki. It tells you all the production and regulations and all that. The federal government, Saki is treated as beer under the IRC, International Revenue Code. So if you're looking for Saki, it's classified as beer, which seems very odd, but they throw that in the beer. For labeling and advertising, though, sake is treated as wine. The Federal Alcohol Administration Act says that it is actually classified as wine during the labeling and advertising. So sake production and sake sales tax and application, all that come under the beer International Revenue Code, whereas if they're going to advertise it or if they're going to label it, it has to go through the wine section. So,
strange.
Huh. It is, you know. And, you know, just a bunch of stuff like that. List in the Saki guidance information. It lists beer guidance information for production and tax, and wine guidance information for labeling and advertising. Government. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. let's see. There's no. I didn't see any events this weekend.
No, not
was
this
it?
Weekend. The 22nd, I think, is our next one. Yes, the 22nd.
Okay.
Yes, our next. So that'll be a week from 2 weeks from tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Or
2 weeks from tomorrow
Saturday.
Will be the next.
Yeah,
right. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's Friday. Okay.
Yeah, we do it for Thursday. We have for years, and we even forgot. So,
yeah.
2 weeks from Saturday is our program.
APPELLAT. I know.
Yeah, really. So,
All my notes, and I don't have spell check on the stupid notepad. And all these notes I've taken, I don't know when this file starts. It's somewhere up in, I don't know, where the first day. Oh, December 26, 2013. That's at least this particular file. How many times we've talked about Appalachians and AVAs, and I've spelt it as in the mountain range, which is totally different. And I'm just going to use the abbreviation from now on. Let me put AVA instead. We'll save that in the future.
You know what I mean. Anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you say Appalachians. I'm like, yeah, sure. I know. There's a difference. I didn't know there was a spelling difference. So.
Yeah, I just, you don't think about it. You really don't. Well, like I say, maybe it's pronounced Appalachian. Yeah. You shouldn't say Appalachian.
I don't know.
No, it's government. It could be pronounced that way. No, it's, you know.
I'll ask Google later, see what happens.
There you go.
All right. Well, yeah. Wire that up to this, and every time we have a, you know what, I probably could wire it into the mixer and have it go through here. So anytime you say, like, you spell out something, this is how it's, I don't know how to pronounce it, we'll just have Google pronounce it on air. That
would
be fun.
That would be funny. Yeah.
I'll see if I can. I'll see if I can swing that.
I probably have 90% of my words I say Google corrected.
Like the French ones and, you know, the foreign ones. I mean,
yeah, all the foreign ones. Yeah,
yeah,
they are.
Tough one.
They are.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So, let's see what she says about this.
Yeah,
one. She's probably laughing.
Probably would
Google
help me. Yeah.
Yeah. See if I can swing that one. Okay, I guess we will close the show for this week. It's almost 8 o'clock, and just about 45, no, less than that. So we'll go ahead and close the show. We'll see everybody next Thursday, which will be July 13th. And
Friday the 13th.
Oh, that was another thing. I was checking the weather for that the place in the Keith Joshua Vineyards in their town in Arizona is 90. No, I forgot. It's like 93, 98 degrees or something. It's supposed to be pretty hot.
Yeah.
But and then they're expecting some.
It's hot. But it's a desert, and as soon as that sun sets, it immediately drops down by like 20 degrees. It's strange.
Nighttime it shows lows like in the mid to upper 60s. So and in the dry, it's gonna be great. It's gonna be very nice. It's gonna be a great event, and that's July 15th. So yeah, that's awesome. Very
and
cool.
And he's a great host. Got some great wines to share with you too. So you know.
Yeah. Sounds like a big thing. All right, I will. We'll close it down, and we'll see you everybody next week. Thanks for tuning in, and for sticking with it through the audio issues early on, but at the beginning. But looks like it's working again, so we're good.
Yeah,
have a good one.
Got it through. So y'all take care. We'll see you
right. Next one. Now I don't hear this. There we go.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron, originating from Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida Estates Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call 813-996-2113. That's 813-996-2113. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on the show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archive shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.